And so we're going to be looking at a passage from Luke chapter 8 this morning. Jesus has just had this man named Jairus come to him and tell him that his daughter had died and he wanted him to come do something. And so Jesus and Jairus are leaving, getting ready to go take care of Jairus' daughter. When, as Jesus is walking out, something happens. And so we're going to pick up in verse 43 of Luke chapter 8 as Jesus is leaving this building, getting ready to go heal this little girl. It says, "And a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped." Now, I want to begin this morning because whenever we go back and do Bible stories, and a lot of times we treat them as stories and we don't really pay a lot of attention. These are real people with real issues, and I want you to try to imagine what it would have been like to be a Jewish woman in this time period with this condition. Now, if you know anything about the Mosaic Law, blood made you unclean. This woman has had a bleeding problem for 12 years. We know this is not internal bleeding because that would not have made her unclean. Now, I don't want to get into specifics, but this is more than likely a female issue, and we'll leave it at that. But I want you to understand that if that is the case, and this has been going on for 12 years, what this would mean for this woman. She is, by definition, continually ceremonial unclean, which means she cannot enter the temple. She cannot work, she cannot be around other people. In fact, in some respects, this is as bad as leprosy. Because she is ceremonially unclean, she can't be around other people. In all likelihood, she probably had not been married. It's possible that she was married, but a lot of the commentary suggests that if she was in fact married, this could be grounds for divorce. That a husband could have divorced her because of this condition, because this condition likely made it where she could not have children. So you think about this, and if you are this woman, how embarrassing this kind of issue is. She is unclean, she is probably unmarried, she is very likely without children, and she is a social outcast. And you could imagine how embarrassing this condition is. Now, if you have leprosy, you're treated badly. But imagine how embarrassing it would be for this woman to live in this time frame and to be treated the way she's treated. And so you notice that when Jesus comes out, she does not walk up to him and ask him to heal her. This is a very unique circumstance in the New Testament. This woman is likely so embarrassed by her condition. And by the way, normally when you envision a healing, what is connected to the healing? Most of the time, how are people healed? That they have to be touched. Now, we know Jesus doesn't have to touch people. We know that from the centurion's servant. But she probably doesn't know that. And so in her mind, I can't ask Jesus to touch me because I'm unclean. And I don't want all these people around to know what's going on with me. And I think a lot of us can identify with that. We don't want everybody around us to know our personal stuff. We don't want people to know the issues we're dealing with and what we're going through. We like to be private. We don't want everybody to know. And so there's an embarrassment factor. There's a privacy factor. There's a concern that Jesus might not even be willing to heal her because she's unclean. And so she comes up with this great plan. I'm just going to touch his cloak. I'm just going to grab the hem of his garment when he comes out. That's all I got to do. That's it. That's what I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to do anything. So it says that when she came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, and it says immediately the hemorrhage stopped. Now that's pretty cool because that means that just by touching the cloak of Jesus, she was healed. Now let me ask you a question. How many times in the Bible do you ever remember somebody walking up and just touching Jesus and being healed? Besides this story, do you ever remember that happening anywhere in the New Testament? nowhere. So this woman, her faith is so amazing that as she walks up, she grabs Jesus' cloak. And it says, her hemorrhage stops. I call this ninja healing. She sneaks up behind him and grabs the cloak and gets healed. Now, here's where the story gets really fun. It says Jesus stopped. Now, you could kind of picture how this works. Jesus is walking. Now, you could picture this. Crowds are all around him. I mean, because everywhere he went, people were around him. And so there's this crowd all around him, and he walks out, and somebody just touches the hem of his cloak. And that probably happened all the time. People, you could imagine his crowds were pressing up against him. And it says, he says, and I kind of picture him stopping, and he says, who is the one who touched me? Now, a lot of times in these stories, you get a lot of context just by reading the story, and a lot of times we miss stuff. So I want you to, as you hear that, and Jesus said, who is the one that touched me? How do you think he said that? Do you think he was really just, hey, who touched me? Now notice how people respond to the question. Jesus says, who touched me? And while they were all denying it. Now, let me ask you again. How do you think the question got asked? If everybody in the crowd went, hey, it wasn't me, man. Wasn't me. It sounds almost like Jesus was agitated or said it with force or with some volume in his voice. Who touched me? Every time I read this passage, by the way, this passage changed a lot since I had kids, because my kids constantly are touching each other, just poking each other, irritating each other. And by the way, they both like to poke and irritate me. My son thinks there's no greater joy in the world than walking by my chair and putting his hand on my bald head. He thinks that's the greatest thing in the world. And I don't usually mind it because his hands are usually cool. And it feels cool for a minute. You all right, son? See, when you mess with the preacher, stories get told. You should know that by now. Sam likes to thump me. Just walk by and thump me. And she doesn't understand that one day she's going to be in college and the money's going to dry up. And it's going to be because she mistreated her father. And there's a biblical thing for that. So, but you know, you understand, Jesus is walking. Now these people are crowded all up against him. And he's like, who touched me? And everybody was denying it. And Peter, because Peter always has to get involved. Peter says, Master, the people are crowding and pressing in on you. Kind of like, how are we supposed to know? Everybody touched you. The crowds are all around you. There are people all over the place. So let's set this up. You've got this circumstance where Jesus has walked out of this crowded place. This woman has maneuvered through the crowd, and all she's done. Now remember, she doesn't touch him. She just touches the cloak. She just touches the cloak. And in a crowded room, why does Jesus all of a sudden turn around and say, who touched me? And if you're one of the disciples, it's likely you've never heard him ask this before. This seems totally, totally out of character for Jesus. So he turns and he's who did this? So Peter's like, well, we don't. There's no way for us to know. We don't know who did this. Jesus, everybody's crowding around you, man. So he says, but Jesus said, someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me. Now, if you ever want to enter into a really great theological debate with a group of preachers, ask them what that verse means. because it is almost impossible to get a room full of ministers to agree on what this verse means. The commentaries are all over the place on this. And there's a lot of reason for that. But it's interesting. It says, now, first of all, one of the problems that we have in this verse is that Jesus is God, right? And Jesus is man. Now, the scripture says he's fully God and fully man. Now, if you're fully God, that means you're omnipotent, right? That means you know everything all the time, right? But if you're fully man, you don't know nothing. As every woman in this room is going, amen, preacher. Amen, preacher. To be fully man, you can't know nothing. So for Jesus to be fully God and fully man, you kind of go, okay, so how does that work? Is he omnipotent all the time, or is he just omnipotent when he wants to be? Does he choose when to know everything and when not to? I mean, it's really hard to understand how this works. It's what makes this story so fascinating. But he says, I know someone touched me. I felt power had gone out of me. Now, when you hear that sentence, what does it sound like Jesus is saying there? That he didn't direct it, but that she did what? She took it. And that he didn't willingly give it to her. She touched him. He said, whoa, somebody just stole some of my healing mojo. Who just stole my healing mojo? And you need to turn around. Hey, whoa, what happened? Now, some of you are going, oh, no, preacher, that's not the way that worked. Hey, how's it written? Sometimes we overthink stuff. Isn't that what the verse says? He says, I was aware that power had gone out of me. Not, hey, I gave somebody some healing. Now I want to know who it was. He said, I felt the power go out of me. All right, verse 47. Now the woman who's still there, because she didn't just touch him and run, because that would have been obvious. Everybody would have known it was her. So she just kind of tries to be, just kind of stand there. Says, when the woman saw that she had not escaped notice, and this gets back to the way Jesus asked the question, how does she come to him? She's trembling. And she fell down before him. Now, why is she trembling? Oh, she's scared. What's she scared of? What if Jesus repos his power? Hey, I didn't give you that. You stole that. That wasn't your. Hey, I heal people. They don't heal themselves. That's not how this works. So you could imagine. Now, some of you are going, he would never do that. But she don't know that. She doesn't know that. She might be terrified that he's going to take it back. Maybe she's trembling because she thinks she's in trouble. Any of you ever get called to the principal's office and you weren't in trouble, but you were sure that you probably were? I remember they called me to the office once to tell me I had made honor roll. I walked into the office going, I didn't do it, man. Whatever it was, I didn't do it because I... Of course, that wasn't my first trip to the principal's office. Let's be clear about that. And so I already had an alibi in place, and I didn't even know for what. Any of you ever had your dad come in and go, I want to talk to you for a minute. And you're like, man, I ain't done nothing. So you could imagine that kind of fear where it's like, I'm in trouble. I've done something wrong. Says she comes before him, and she's trembling, and she fell down before him. And when she says she fell down before him, how do you picture that? Face in the dirt, hands at his feet. She has laid down in front of him, trembling. And she declared in the presence of all the people. Oh, now it gets real. She declared in the presence of all the people the reason she'd done it. This poor woman who has been so embarrassed and so humiliated for 12 years, by the way, is what the passage tells us, how long this has been going on. Mark tells us 12 years in his account. For 12 years, this woman has had this condition. And all the shame and the embarrassment and everything that's come with it. And now her worst fears, she has to tell not just Jesus. And you can imagine the size of the crowd around them. And she has to tell everything. She has to tell everything. And so she lays down in his presence, and she's trembling, and she declares in the presence of everybody why she had touched him and how she'd been immediately healed. Now, we're going to come back to verse 48 in a minute, but there's some things in this story that I think are really relevant for us, and I want to kind of go back and touch on some of those. So if we can, let's go back to verse 43. We all have things, and in verse 43, you got this woman who's had this hemorrhage for 12 years. She couldn't be healed by anyone. She came up and touched Jesus' cloak. Everybody in this room's got something to be embarrassed about, because we're all sinners. And there is nobody in this room who would want to stand up today and say, let me tell you the worst thing I've done. Let me tell you some of my colorful history. None of us want that. When I was a youth minister at Hunter's Bridge a lifetime ago, somebody I knew from high school, wasn't somebody I went to high school with, but somebody I knew from high school, came to church with somebody one Sunday. And it happened to be a Sunday I was preaching. And I was so embarrassed, because that person had known me from a time when I was not as well behaved as I was at that time, which ironically was a time that I was not as well behaved as I am maybe now. And all I could think about that morning when I was getting up to preach was, how am I going to get up and preach with this person who's sitting there who knows some of the stuff I've done? Because I did some of it with them. You know, how am I going to do that? And it kind of consumed me that morning before I got up to preach that there's a person I'm going to be up there preaching. This person knows stuff from my past. That's one of the reasons a lot of people don't feel qualified to do ministry stuff. It's like, well, what if I encounter somebody that knew me as I used to be? See, the truth is, everybody in this room has got a skeleton in their closet. Some of them are bigger than others. Some of you have a whole skeleton family, maybe. Maybe even a little skeleton dog in there. I mean, we've all got stuff we're not proud of. We've all got stuff we've done. We have things that embarrass us, that in some ways make us feel unworthy to ask Jesus personally to make us right, because we're embarrassed. We feel guilt and shame at the life that we've lived. Maybe some of it is our own fault. Maybe some of it is through no fault of our own. But regardless, we carry this baggage with us. And this woman, as she approaches Jesus, she has baggage that has created, through no fault of her own, has created this anxiety and this fear about how she's going to be received by other people. And everyone in this room can relate to that. All of us can. And maybe that skeleton is 50 years ago, maybe it's 15 minutes ago, but we all have them. It's one of the great unifying things in the church is that we are all imperfect people who have plenty to hide. And that's one of the most amazing things about Christ, is that he has forgiven that stuff. And so we don't have to bear the guilt of it anymore, but yet we still do. We still want people to think that we're all put together and we're all buttoned up and we've got everything together and everything is perfect. And that's how we want people to see us. And so we don't like to share our struggles. We don't want people to know that stuff. They may talk about us. They may look at us differently. They won't look at us the same if they knew this thing. And so this poor woman really, I think in a lot of ways, symbolizes everybody in this room. But what we want to do is we want to sneak up and grab the hem of Jesus' cloak, and we want to get our forgiveness that way. Quietly and peacefully, that nobody knows it. And that we can get those things dealt with, and we don't even have to look at him face to face. We can just kind of get, you know, just reach and grab that thing, grab that cloak, and get that forgiveness, and not even have to confront him. Well, the next great thing in the story is it doesn't work that way. Because as soon as that happened, maybe that omnipotence kicks in. And I'll be honest with you, as I read this story, I don't know if he chose to know who touched him or if he chose not to. I'm not sure which way it went, because I think he had the ability to pick. And so I don't know which way he picked, but I know this. Who touched me? Why does he ask? Why does it matter? He wants her to own it. No covert salvation here. You're not going to do this. You're not going to come up and steal it quietly and skulk away. And it's not a faith issue, right? Because she had enough faith to touch his cloak and be healed. Nobody else ever did that. So we know it's not a faith issue. It's not a faith issue. It's a trust issue. And some of you think, well, isn't that the same thing? No. She had plenty of faith that Jesus could heal her. She just didn't have enough trust that he would. If he knew who was asking, with all these people around, if he knew I was unclean, if he really knew all my condition and everything that went with us, what if he said no? You guys remember the story of the Syrophoenician woman who comes to Jesus? She's got a child that's demon-possessed. And she comes to Jesus and she's pleading for him to heal her. Remember what Jesus says to her? He goes, nah. Nah. And she's like, what? And she falls down in front of him and starts begging. And then he says, it's not right for the master to give the children's bread to the dogs. So this one was a Gentile. She wasn't a Jew. And Jesus said, it's not right for me to take the blessings that are meant for my people and give them to people like you. By the way, speaking of stories that are hard to deal with in Scripture, why would Jesus ever say that to somebody? And then if you remember the story, the woman looks at him and says, yeah, but even the dogs get crumbs from the master's table. By the way, if Jesus said that to you know what most of you would have done? You'd have got up, maybe use some sign language, stomped off, mad, angry. She goes, hey, even the dogs get some crumbs, man. And Jesus marveled at her faith. This woman is so concerned about her image and how she's perceived by people that she doesn't want to publicly deal with Jesus. She just wants to keep it quiet. And he's not about that. He's not about that. So he says, who touched me? Who touched me? And immediately, the way he said it, everybody's like, hey, it wasn't me, man. Yikes. Wasn't me. What? And Peter feels obligated to step in. Hey, Jesus, man, look, the crowd's everywhere. How do we know who did it? And then he says this. Someone touched me. I was aware that the power had gone out of me. Now, here's to me, just a fascinating question. How do you steal Jesus' power? How does somebody steal Jesus' power? Now, there's only one possible answer to that question. How could this woman siphon off healing power from Jesus without his permission? How's that possible? And the answer, the only answer that I can come up with, And maybe someday I'll get to heaven and I'll be like, hey, I got a question about that story. He's like, oh yeah, I'll be happy to explain it to you. But until then, I'm just have to do the best I can. So here's what I come up with. How did that woman get access to that power? That's why he had it. That's what was there. It was there for people to use. Any of you ever on Halloween not been home, so you just left a bowl out on the porch? You ever done that? Just left a bowl on the porch, and then you were really optimistic, so you put a sign up, said, please only take two, which was probably the dumbest thing you've ever done. But you know there were some kids who would, but you know what's funny? There are some kids will come up and they'll just scoop out like 26 pieces, but you know there's some kids who will come up and not take any because nobody's there. And then, but why is it there? Why'd you put the candy on the porch? It's so people could take some. Jesus had that power for a purpose. It was there to be used, right? It was there to be used. And by the way, guess why Jesus hung on the cross, was killed, and resurrected on the third day? Guess why he did all that? So you could have access to forgiveness. That's why he did it. It's there for you. I mean, it's there for you. All you have to do is what? Take it. He put it right out there, right? Here it is. Here's all you got to do to get it. Just go do this. It's yours. You don't have to come stand before me and beg and plead. You don't have to fill out a form. You don't have to do. It's just go do. Here, go do this. It's free for you. I just think this woman was able to access that power because that's what the power was there for. It was there, and Jesus, clearly, Jesus wasn't guarding it very well. Because, I mean, look, really, can you steal something from Jesus he doesn't want you to have access to? Probably not. So then we get to verse 47. Now this, to me, is where we get rid of a really good thing. When this woman saw that she could not escape notice, she came trembling and she fell down before him and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him. Why did Jesus make this poor woman do this? I mean, she's healed, right? By the way, in verse 48, he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Couldn't he have done that before she fell trembling? When he said, who touched me? And she said, it was me. And he could have said, hey, daughter, your faith made you well. Go in peace. But he waits. He waits. He waits for her to tell her story. Why? And here's the thing. He doesn't do it to humiliate her. That's not what Jesus is in the business of doing. He's not trying to humiliate people. He wanted everyone in that crowd to hear her story and appreciate the pain she had been through and what his power had done to free her. Amen. That's what he wanted. He wasn't trying to embarrass her. He wasn't trying to humiliate her. He just wanted her to tell her story because her story had value. Why did her story have value? Because it was the story of her life and how Jesus had changed it in one moment. It was a story of her pain and her suffering and her humiliation of everything she had been through. And by the way, maybe some of the people in that crowd, I kind of picture having like a hood pulled up so people can't see who she is. There may have been people in that crowd who are like, oh, yeah, I won't talk to her. She's unclean. I've never had anything to do with her. I've seen her around town. You know, there may be people there who knew this woman, who maybe had mistreated her because of the law. They had felt justified in mistreating her because of the law. And so now Jesus wants her to tell her story. Not because he wants to embarrass her or humiliate her, because her story had value. It had power. So now I take you back to those things in your closet, those things that embarrass us, that we don't want to share. Those of us who have convinced ourselves that we can go through life having just reached and grabbed some forgiveness from Jesus' cloak and then skulked away quietly so that nobody ever knows. We got our forgiveness, but we're not telling anybody because we don't want to tell our story. It's embarrassing, and it's really personal. It's just between me and Jesus, and I've heard people say that. My salvation is just between me and Jesus. And we miss one of the most fundamentally true things about our life. It's that we have a story to tell. A story that matters. Those things that Jesus has freed us from have value to other people. But when Christians accept that forgiveness and skulk away and keep it quiet, the story that just kind of pops into my head as I say that. Remember when Jesus says, who has a light and does what? Hides it under a basket. Who does that? Why would you have a light and then hide it under a basket? That doesn't make any sense at all. In fact, what should you do with the light? You should hold it up where everybody can see it, right? Now, you think about that, and what's Jesus saying, and you think about this story, and it's like, here's this woman, and Jesus, as soon as she comes and she falls down, I think he's like, oh, okay, I know who this is. I know this woman. I know her story, but I want her to tell it. Not so I can embarrass her, not so I can humiliate her, but so she can be a testimony. Because you know what? There may be other people in this crowd who have the same situation. Maybe not the same exact situation, but they're too embarrassed. They've been hurt too many times. They're too unsure of whether or not I'll fix them. I need this woman. I need her to give her testimony. I need her to share her affliction because her story may be relevant to other people. And I want her to tell it. We all know people who are in some dark places. They have collapsed under the weight of their own guilt and their own shame, a lifetime of bad decisions, or maybe just one bad decision that has now snowballed. We know people like that. And your story might matter to them. Your story might matter to them. But we don't, a lot of times we don't want to tell our story. We don't want to tell it. Because in our story, man, there's some baggage. There's some stuff we don't want to talk about. There's some poor decisions we made we don't want to relive, and we don't want to share that stuff. But Jesus is looking at you today, and he's saying, hey, who accepted my forgiveness and is trying to sneak away? Who's doing that? Hey, you stop. You turn around and you tell your story. You share what this forgiveness really has meant. Tell your story. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, everybody needs to go home and make a YouTube video and just go, this is the story of my life. Rated M. Get the kids out of the room before you listen to it. That's not what we're talking about. But the truth is, everybody in this room probably knows somebody whose biggest hang-up about Jesus is the fear that they're too dirty, they're too messed up that Jesus would ever forgive them. And you may be like, oh, no, that's not true, dude. I can prove it. Let me tell you about my life. Let me tell you about what Christ did for me. Let me tell you about my past. And you don't have to tell all of it, but there may be parts of it that are relevant to people. And we just, we don't want to share it. We want to create this image that we're all, we just come to church and we're all perfect. We just all got it put together and we don't struggle with anything. You know, life is just easy and simple and Jesus makes everything just smooth. And so we hide those struggles. It says, when the woman saw that she could not escape notice, she came trembling and she fell down and she declared in the presence of all the people the reason she had done what she did. And how she had been immediately healed. That's an important part of the story, right? And so after she does that, and by the way, the whole time this is happening, do you think Jairus is standing there going, dude, really? Do we have time for this? Aren't you supposed to be going to my place and fixing my daughter? But she tells the whole story. And then you get this, verse 48. And he said to her, daughter. Now, there's some significance in that word. Because when he calls her daughter, that is a term of personal affection. That is a term that was not normally used. For him to use that term, it meant, in essence, a closeness, a kinship. And so he calls her daughter, and he says, your faith has made you well. Well, didn't she already know that? I mean, she had touched the cloak, she'd been healed. But by sharing her story, he says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Now, here's I'm going to close with this. Why could she go in peace? Because she didn't have anything to hide anymore. I mean, her story's out there now. She shared her testimony with people. She didn't have, I mean, think about this. She's been unclean for 12 years. Now this next week she walks in the market and she's not unclean anymore, and people want to know what happened, and there's going to be questions, right? There's going to be questions. What happened? And she doesn't want to tell because she's kind of keeping it a secret, but now she's kind of told it. Hey, look, this is my story. This is what happened. I can go in peace now because I don't have to hide it anymore. I don't have to hide it. I've shared with all these people my testimony, and oh, I got peace. I have known in my life a lot of people who had relationship with Christ who didn't have peace. And you kind of wonder how's that possible? I mean, how can you have a relationship with Christ but you don't have peace? Because by definition, a relationship with Christ is supposed to bring peace, right? And I wonder sometimes, why is there no peace? Is it because they're still trying to hide their past? Is they don't want people to know? Or is it because they don't really believe that Jesus has forgiven them? And you'd be amazed the number of Christians who go to bed every night not certain that they've been forgiven, which is awful. Because the most fundamental concept of Christianity is that when you accept Christ, you receive what? Forgiveness of sins. That's the most basic, fundamental concept of Christianity. Yet there are millions of Christians who probably go to bed every night going, well, I know he forgave some of them, but there's that one thing. And there's no peace. But in that moment where she tells her story and she shares her struggles and the humiliation and the embarrassment, and she just gets it all out there. She does away with it. In that moment, Jesus calls her his child, and then he tells her that not that she can go away healed, but that she could go away in peace. I'm not trying to get anybody to come up here next Sunday and stand up here and go, well, let me just outline every bad thing I've ever done. That's not That's not what I'm trying to encourage you to do, because for some of you, we wouldn't have enough time. And that's why I don't get them to do that. That's not what I'm trying to get you to do. But what I am trying to get you to understand is that every single person in this room and everybody watching online, everyone who's hearing this message today has a story. And it may not matter to everybody, but it matters to somebody. Your testimony, your story matters. Ricky and Roxanne have a testimony about their car accident. That might not matter to everybody, but it might matter to somebody who's been in a bad accident and is wondering, why this happened to me? Some of you in here have gone through divorces that were of no fault of your own, and it's an embarrassment, and you're frustrated by it, but the reality is it's a testimony for somebody else who may go through something very similar. Some of you in here have lost loved ones, unfortunately, tragically, and you don't like to talk about it, but the reality is that may be a testimony and a witness to people who are going through the same thing. The reality of our lives is that we're not alone, and people deal with the same stuff we deal with every day. And our lives are designed to be a testimony to people who are struggling with like problems. And our greatest testimony that we can ever give is, this is how Jesus got me through that. This is how Jesus brought me healing. This is how Jesus brought me peace. This is how Jesus brought me salvation. And no, it wasn't overnight. And no, it wasn't magically like that. But he got me there. And I have peace now that I could never have had without him. And you can have that peace too. We are a story. Each and every person in this room is a story to be told. Like this woman. Jesus was like, I could let you walk away with the healing and not make you tell your story, but I want it told. It matters. Your story matters. This morning, I want to challenge you to look for opportunities to share your story. Like I said, not to just get on Facebook and go, hey, look, the preacher told me to tell my story, so here's my post. By the way, if you want to do that, I guess that's okay. But I think you all understand what I'm talking about. As we encounter people in our daily walk who are struggling, and sometimes we encounter people that are struggling with the stuff that we've struggled with, that's not an opportunity for us to quietly slip away, having touched Jesus' cloak and skulked off into the distance, keeping our secret. But God is opening doors for us to let our lives be a testimony to others. Those opportunities present themselves sometimes at unexpected times. My challenge for you today is to be looking for those and to not be afraid to open up and share those things when the time is appropriate, because your testimony may make a difference in somebody else's life, and that is why we're here. We do not take our light and put it under a bushel, but our light is supposed to be shining where people can see it. I'm going to ask the praise team to come and lead us in our communion hymn this morning. I believe Catherine Pressey has our communion meditation this morning, and so we're going to have our communion hymn, and then Catherine will come lead us in a meditation, and we'll have a time of communion together this morning.